Welcome to the Learning College. My name is Alex Linder, and you can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, pyville.net, kirksvilletoday.com. Today we're going to do Chapter 2 of George Lincoln Rockwell's White Power. It's a very short chapter, so pretty short. So it won't take all that long. In Chapter 1, we had essentially a laundry list of all the symbols of decadence and decline that were visible to Rockwell when he was writing it shortly before he was assassinated. I guess he finished it up. It must have been within months because he cited stuff at least as late as December 1966, and he was killed in 67. So anyway, he any year from then to now, but I guess the remarkable thing for us talking about it many decades later is that exactly the same things are going on today. They're just in a much more advanced form, as slowly as bit by bit. Society under the control of the Jews and the legal institutions, the changes, the overturnings of laws, the imposition of new tyrannical anti-white laws that took place very much in this exact period, the later 60s, have produced the kind of world the Jews were going for, where whites are on the run, blacks and browns are empowered and made objects of reverence in the mass media, and everything that we would think of as normal, valuable social order is destroyed and even invalidated intellectually, along with being physically destroyed, the removal of statues of our ancestors and memorials to our past, replaced with new black worship. Jewish garbage, Jewish atrocities are turned into the real history instead of the actual thing. Anyway, Chapter 2 is called Spiritual Syphilis. White Power, Chapter 2, Spiritual Syphilis. The guy at the door of Nazi headquarters was the living embodiment of the national suicide I set forth in Chapter 1. He seemed young, but you couldn't be sure because he was wearing a matted red beard. He sounds like an Antifa scum on the West Coast, huh? He wasn't wearing clothes, just a raggedy blanket and sandals. Shades, sunglasses, covered his eyes. Unkempt hair covered much of the rest of his face. Our duty officer, again, they had their own Nazi house. I think it was in Arlington, Virginia, or somewhere in Virginia. And so they would have duty officers and other men. They remember, American Nazi Party was what it wound up being called. Our duty officer, sharply uniformed in well-pressed khakis, jump boots, and sidearm, just stood there looking bug-eyed in amazement. The apparition, his head sort of bobbing and rolling to some rhythm while he snapped his fingers, looked the duty officer up and down. "What's with you Nazi cats?" he said. Back then they would call people cats. The duty officer stared. "Say, man, will that thing shoot?" The man in the blanket tried again, pointing a finger at with an inch-long dirty nails at the duty officer's 45. "Certainly," replied the duty officer, finally getting over his first shock. "What can we do for you?" "I want to join, man. Like, I want to be a Nazi. Want to gas me a Jew. I want to sign up. Where's this Rockwell cat?" I was in a back room printing. I had to do much of it myself back then. This is stuff that William Pierce would come from the West Coast, Oregon physics professor, Oregon State, to help him with. "Where's this Rockwell cat?" So he says he was in the back room printing. I heard all this going on, although I didn't like to let visitors see me covered with printer's ink. I couldn't resist coming out to see what was at the door. "He wants to join, sir," the duty officer said to me, still flabbergasted. I couldn't resist talking to this thing from outer space. I have often found that I learn most, not from books and literature, but from people and events themselves. And this guy looked like a whole encyclopedia of everything degenerate, remember? Rockwell studied things intellectually to achieve his position, but he was also in the Navy for almost an entire career. And then he had a long background in advertising as well, and his parents were vaudevillian actors. So background of speaking, acting, advertising, rhetorical, verbal, using words, and not just using words to achieve effects, but intellectually studying things to penetrate the inner mystery and arrive at the actual source of the why, the cause of everything he disliked. And I think he, or was it Revelo Oliver? As I've said, he, Oliver, and Pierce traveled a similar path. I think it's probably the commonest path that a certain type of person who is driven to go farther than what satisfies the average man, which is Christianity and Christian conservatism, has to have more than that and has to seek the actual why. And when he does that, he inevitably arrives at the Jew. Okay. And this includes even people who apparently go beyond or outside the Jew to supernatural sources like lizards, shall we say, or Nazis. These being mythical creatures rather than the actual National Socialist. These are people who understand that the Jew is the problem, but for political reasons, they can't say it. It may be illegal in their country, or they're trying to build a mass audience and make money off of it. And to say Jew is to cut your money almost immediately and for all time. So only those who aren't driven primarily by monetary interests are going to be the ones who are talking about Jews. The ones, it's never in your financial incentive where Jews have control to talk about Jews. So anyway, he found his way to the truth, but he's saying he learns a lot more from people than out of books or literature by talking to them, because they'll yield perspectives that you never would have thought of because they're so wacky. And yet they may be true to that person's lived experience and thereby reflect a little piece of the whole. This guy looked like a whole encyclopedia of everything degenerate. You can see and smell the matted hair. I invited him in. We talked. He couldn't stay still, but kept moving around the room, seeming to float a few inches above the floor. I later learned that he was on pills and narcotics. After an hour or so of talking, he began to change a bit. He appeared unsure of himself in the presence of something he'd never experienced before. Men who were sure of themselves and had a purpose. A look of unbelieving wonder came over his blue eyes, even though the shades, as I talked to him, of what we really were and why we had given up everything in fun in life to fight for our nation and race. So he's starting to understand. Let me re-intone that again. After an hour or so of talking, he began to change a bit. So he's thinking it's all kind of fun or groovy or a joke. He's high on drugs. But then he begins to realize, maybe the drugs are wearing off a little bit, that this is serious stuff, and he's never seen anything serious before. A lot of you will know that feeling. He appeared unsure of himself in the presence of something he'd never experienced before. Men who were sure of themselves and had a purpose. A look of unbelieving wonder came over his blue eyes. The blue hinting maybe there's something salvageable here, even though the shades, as I talked to him, of what we really were and why we had given up everything of fun in life to fight for our nation and race. Little by little, I began to get the story out of him. He was only 17 years old and had lived an entire lifetime. He'd done everything, tried all the kicks, was already bored to death with an empty life. He'd made a mistress out of his art teacher. He'd run a den of degeneracy and debauchery called Mule's Pad, where the local beats, beatniks, that was a big thing in the mid-50s, promoted by Jews, sort of forerunners of the hippies, but not exactly the same thing. And wild crowds did anything at his Mule's Pad, where the local beats, beatniks, and wild crowds did anything, including enjoy dope. He'd shot a man, gotten off, and lived as fast and hard as he could until finally he contemplated suicide in utter despair of finding anything worth doing anymore. All this by the age of 17. Before he committed suicide, he told me, he decided to come see the Nazi cats, quote-unquote, figuring it might be one last kick. What he found, unexpectedly, was what every human being needs to survive this life, a purpose. Something which gives life more meaning than a constant search for more pleasure and kicks. He actually convinced me he wanted to try to be a stormtrooper. As a matter of policy, whenever I hear that, as I do every day, I do all I can to discourage the applicant. We want no dabblers, but dedicated, fanatical fighters who will stick through hell itself. With this crazy character, I went even further. I made fun of him. I told him he'd never make it, that we'd run him off the first day. He rose to the challenge. You name it, I'll make it, he said. Strangely, I could sense a fiercely burning will behind the words. I told him he couldn't come up to try life as a Nazi stormtrooper until he was 18. He left, vowing to return in a few months. He did return, without the beatnik getup. He turned out to be a blonde young Viking built for combat. We poured it to him. There was no place left inside for him to sleep, so he was assigned to a wrecked car out back. It was still winter and cold, but the kid moved into the wrecked car with a couple of blankets. We put him to work cleaning the toilets and yard. He worked. Spring came, and then a broiling summer. He was still in the wrecked car, eaten alive by mosquitoes. I tried him on the printing press and never saw such a bear for work. He was all dried out of booze, off the pills and dope, exercising plenty, and showing every sign of making it. He accomplished dozens of dangerous missions against the SNCC, NAACP, communists, and peace creeps. He accompanied me to many a fight and many a jail. Back then, you could get in fights and get in jail, whereas today, no matter which side you're on, today it's more like the Antifa when they were trashing everything in Oregon and getting let out immediately the few times they were caught. Whereas right-wing people who did nothing were thrown in jail for years. It was a different time back then in the 60s. There was still a little bit of fairness in the system. Within 11 months, faster than almost anybody before or since, this kid, remember, Rockwell doesn't know he's going to be assassinated in the next year. So you have to think about what might have developed from Rockwell's party. Within 11 months, faster than almost anybody before or since, this kid became an officer in the stormtroop section and led more successful operations against the enemy than any single party officer, with one possible exception. An example of the work of this kid was the time the black agitators were trying to unseat the white Mississippi delegation, and our own blackface delegation, quote-unquote, sent the black agitators packing back to Mississippi as laughingstocks. My ex-beatnik managed to race onto the floor of Congress on opening day in blackface with top hat, loincloth, and cigar, shouting, "As the Mississippi delegation, and I demands my seat!" The young man escaped the vicious circle of despair, boredom, and degeneracy of millions of modern youth only because he happened upon the spiritual life preserver of Nazi love of race and nation before he sank forever into the putrid slime of modern spiritual syphilis. There will be many who say that he could have been saved, perhaps even more effectively, by religion. 50 years ago, yes. But I've had 5 years of experience seeing these lost kids on college campuses all over America, and I can assure the reader that most of these young people are far too cynical and hardened to be able to open their ears and heart, even for a moment, to accept a religious approach. Start talking about religion to such hard case cynics, and you drive them even further and further away, no matter how hard you try. It takes a new and shocking approach, shocking all caps, a dramatic and powerful approach, to have any hope of making an impression on such lost, bitter kids. We have it, and it works. Millions and millions of the youth of all Western nations are sinking into various degrees of the misery and degradation of the young beat who came to our door in beard, blanket, and sandals. Other millions of good people who don't look like beatniks are lost, without purpose, without confidence, without ambition, without beliefs or religion, without respect for home, flag, country, parents, or anything else, without self-control or discipline, without morals or standards of any kind, with neither love for their own people nor hatred for their mortal enemies, without hope, and without any real desire to live in any real sense. Beat is an apt description. He say not just of a small group that were labeled beats, but of really a huge percentage of the current generation. They have indeed had almost everything beaten out of them. They have gotten disgusted with the hypocrisy, disorder, and corruption of our times, and quit. In their own words, they have, quote, dropped out. In Battle for the Mind, William Sargent, top British psychologist, shows how the communists used the principles of Soviet psychologist Pavlov, he of the dog experiments, to, quote, brainwash, unquote, victims. And the first thing they do is empty the minds and souls of the subject. They spiritually beat him until he quits. Once he is empty, it is a relatively easy job for the communist masters to pour back into his head whatever lies they want. That's how the Soviets can produce victims after a year or so in jail who get up in court and shout that they are guilty and beg to be punished, as did the victims of Stalin's first great purge. Our youth, in various stages of beatnikism, are precisely like the victims of Soviet brainwashing. They are empty or nearly empty of anything positive. They are sick and disgusted with just about everything. Although they don't realize it, they are desperate to believe in something, to become part of something bigger than they are, to be worthwhile, to have a purpose, to have somebody care about them enough to discipline them, and to show them something worthwhile to do in this world. But nobody does show these lost kids anything they can believe deeply. All caps, that sentence. They have been made to feel they are living in a ruined, dirty, hypocritical world about to blow itself to pieces with the bomb. Many of them have been spoiled rotten. Many know nothing of the constructive efforts to earn a living, but they are told they are the same as black Negroes, and they try desperately to believe that, but it destroys them inside because instincts are stronger than words. Worst of all, they've been taught that mature love of anything, except themselves and pleasure, is corny and square. Their family, flag, country, national heroes, race, and even God have been dragged down and ridiculed until there are no fixed stars in their heavens, nothing to aim at, nothing but an aimless wandering for more and more selfish pleasures and kicks. Unthinking animals can live from moment to moment on purely animal pleasures and satisfactions, but man has been blessed, or cursed, with consciousness and the ability to imagine the future. Man forms an opinion of himself. This has given him an even greater need than the mere satisfaction of his animal needs. Man cannot live by bread alone, says the Bible, and no truer words have ever been recorded. Men long for the admiration of other men and a clear conscience. Every great religion in the world sets its precepts for human behavior not on mere satisfaction of animal pleasures and kicks, but on the more lasting and deeply satisfying joys of outgoing activity, activity to be good and helpful to other people. When men concentrate only on themselves and their own animal lusts, they begin to despise themselves, they become despicable and hated by other men, and they become unhappy and hateful in turn. And each generation of Western civilization is being brought up to be more spoiled and selfish than the last. Predictably, each generation is becoming more and more unhappy, until today we have many young people from supposedly, quote, the best homes, going forth into the streets to beat old men to death just for kicks. Remember, Jack Kerouac, that's where this notion of kicks and spade kicks, nigger kicks, beatniks, all this stuff hangs together. This is the jargon and the slang they were using in the 50s and 60s, while others abandoned themselves as hippies to drugs, filth, and sloth. During the Korean War, not one American prisoner of war escaped. Many Americans, almost half of them, cooperated with the enemy when captured. Korean War. No matter how vicious the enemy in all previous wars, Americans have never failed to escape in large numbers and have always resisted every effort by the enemy to make turncoats out of prisoners. But now, the fighting American spirit is dying. Americans have more cars, more telephones, more televisions, more household appliances and luxuries, more of almost everything than any human beings who have ever lived or who live now. Yet never have so many had so little inside. Never have there been so many suffering intolerable boredom. Never have people been packed so close in our giant cities. Yet never have people been so alone, so cut off from one another. There is a vast ocean of spiritual misery drowning great numbers of our people. Many of them have lost their religion, and there is nothing to fill the black numbing void which freezes the soul of modern, quote, emancipated, unquote, men. They desperately seek escape from this cold hopelessness in alcohol, LSD, dope, or wild, crazy living. It is not physical lacks or hardship which bears down on our people and drives them unconsciously toward national and racial suicide. It is a spiritual failing, a disease of the spirit, which has our people down and beaten. Our people are rotting from the inside, no matter how the outside gives the appearance of prosperity and happiness. Like a man with a diseased heart, the first time America is subjected to a real crisis, unless something changes mighty quickly, America and all of Western civilization with us will fold up with a whimper and die. No spiritually healthy people would ever tolerate the sort of horrors cataloged in Chapter 1. Western civilization, as Spengler predicted long ago, and America in particular, are far gone down the road toward decay and death, nor is there any real resistance. On the contrary, millions have made a, quote, love, unquote, cult and a, quote, religion out of worshiping their own destroyers and work tirelessly to hasten our national and racial death. Is this a natural development? Are we as a civilization and as a nation dying of old age, senility, and natural decay? Or is there something unnatural about the situation? And if there is something unnatural, if there is something sinister, what is it and who is doing it and why? Where is all this spiritual syphilis coming from? And that's the end of Chapter 2. So he laid out all the symptoms in Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. He says, well, it's a spiritual problem, spiritual syphilis, spiritual decay. People don't have anything to live for. They're hard and cynical even when they're young. But in the figure of the young kid who did a total turnaround, he's saying that that's a microcosm for what our entire race and all of our nations could experience. And we could look at Orania today where there's no blacks in South Africa. They're preserving Afrikaans. On every street, the buildings are going up. Wherever you find the white man, things are going up around him. So our problems are not internal. They are in the way that he says, but all that is caused by something external, which is where he ends the chapter. Where is this coming from in the midst of all this material plenty? Where is this spiritual source coming from? We've been deprived of our natural self-understanding and context. And I think you probably know what he's going to say. But anyway, that's enough for today. Thanks for being with me. Alex Linder, reading and discussing Chapter 2 of George Lincoln Rockwell's White Power. As always, find everything permanently recorded at vnnforum.com and more or less permanently recorded at pivel.net and kirksfieldtoday.com, where it's our social media and our daily digest from the white point of view, that if you read it every day for 2 weeks, you will understand better than reading anything else the problems and the actual conditions of your larger life. That is your life, not as just a man or a woman or a child, but as a member of a larger racial community. Thanks for being with me, and I'll be back with you again real soon.